Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck and I appreciate all of you tuning in on the weekend. And hey, for everyone who is coming by and visiting our website, kereport.com, and our podcast, Corlin Economics Report, throughout the week there's been a noticeable increase in traffic. Clearly a lot of people are starting to pay attention to the precious metals sector. And man, oh man, I've been having a lot of company updates released throughout the week. Please, everyone, check out those company updates and please keep sending me your questions for companies. I'm doing my best to reach out to these companies, bring them on the show. Everybody's busy right now, but hey, everybody's also very excited about their stories. So I'm going to do my best to keep keeping all of you up to date. I'm happy to say that I'm kicking off this weekend show with Richard Postma, aka Doc. Now, Doc, we haven't chatted for a few weeks now, so I want to get an update on a number of markets. Let's start off with the U.S. equity markets. The U.S. equity markets have been relatively boring. This week, a little bit more of a choppy week, but long gone are those days where we are hitting circuit breakers day after day. And I think we're all happy that we're not going through that again. However, hey, look, the breadth is still relatively weak in the U.S. equity markets. However, there's still this Fed put that is clearly on a lot of investors' minds. Doc, if we take a look at the S&P or the Dow, still not back to its all-time highs earlier this year, but still in an uptrend. What's your thought on the status of U.S. equity markets?
I think the U.S. equity markets are going to be boring for a while. We all know that we have an election coming up and that the Fed will probably be as accommodative as they have to be. And I think many people realize that, and I think so they're going to stick with this market, I think, going forward, because there's not a lot of threat to it as far as the Fed supporting this market. It's also interesting that when you look at the weekly chart on the S&P and Dow Jones, there's a gap up around for the Dow Industrial is about 29,000. I wouldn't be surprised if we go up and fill that gap as we move toward November. It also corresponds to a VIXI gap as far as the VIX is concerned. And there's a gap down around 17 or 18. And I think we're going to make our way down to that gap as well. It kind of corresponds with the conventional market gap. So I think we're not going to have any big surprises in these markets until as we get closer to the election in November.
Really? So you don't think the election is going to play havoc with these markets in the next couple months? Usually we do see some turmoil and usually a bit of a sell-off in equity markets as we head into elections. Why do you think investors are going to be able to ignore this election for so long?
Well, it's not whether they're going to be able to ignore it, but I think they're going to make sure, Powell's going to make sure that they keep this thing levitating. They have been taking some money off of their balance sheets, but any indication of a big move down, we might move down here a little bit, but you can bet that they're going to maintain this level. So I don't think the investors are going to have a big role in this anymore, or the pandemic news or anything else. I think it's going to be all a money-supported market as we move forward into the fall.
Well, we will hear from the Fed next week. And again, all assumptions are that the Fed is going to remain very easy, very loose with their monetary policy. But even as you said, their balance sheet has actually been shrinking a little bit over the past few weeks to months. That also just shows that a bit more money is flowing in and around the system. There isn't quite this squeeze for cash. Again, those gaps, though, that on the weekly chart still have yet to be filled. something like the S&P, it's right at the lower part of this gap. So technically, it could be filled, who knows, next week or at least throughout next month in August. Is that your time frame for this general boring melt-up nature, or do you think that will go on for longer?
I think it'll go on for longer. I think it'll play well into September and October. I think it's going to continue to be boring. If you look at some of the momentum indicators, they're looking awfully boring too. And it looks like we may see a little bit movement up to sideways yet into August. And then we might start drifting down a little bit. So we might make it by August, the latter part, but I really question whether it'll be that early. But everything looks just boring, especially even on the long-term charts. And I guess that's good, you know, for the conventional market people at the current time. But even on the strength indicators, there's a gradual drift down by the bearish indicator. And I think that's going to be in play for a while, at least for 2 or 3 months.
So, Doc, a calm U.S. equity markets, even if it's not just screaming higher, isn't that good for investors? Because, quite frankly, if we're getting the flip side of that and panic enter the markets, then we could see another March event where everybody sells and everybody races out of the market, which hits all sectors.
True. There's one thing that bothers me a little bit, and that's the MACD on the monthly chart. Because the 12-month moving average is moving toward the 26, and it's going to have to make up its mind whether it's going to start to curl down or not. And we're going to find that out probably in September. So we'll see what happens there.
So, Doc, when it comes to, okay, this general sense of calm for the markets, clearly tech has been standing out. Tech is already at all-time highs. It doesn't seem like anything can get in the way of some of these high-flying tech stocks. Any comments on the continued strength of tech?
Yeah, I think even in our economy is not healthy. And when it's all said and done with the pandemic, it's not going to be healthy. We haven't seen this V recovery, although some people would say because we've risen since March. But this is a struggling market, and it's a struggling economy. And I just can't see how that's going to change at all. And by the end of the year, we're going to have a question mark on this market, actually, Corey, and we'll know by January, I think, of next year what's going to happen as far as this whole market is concerned.
All right, Doc, let's talk about precious metals. I know everybody likes hearing your calls for the precious metals. Let's first start by balancing gold versus silver. Silver had been playing some catch up to gold, especially early on this week when silver was moving up about a dollar a day. Started to show some weakness at the end of the week, but hey, silver is still at a breakout level. It has broken all of the downtrend lines that the bears could draw. Gold also this week knocking on the door of all-time highs. Gold continues to be strong. You look at a monthly chart, and gold looks like it's going to be up for 5 straight months. This will be the 5th month in a row where the gold price is higher. Where's the balance between investing in gold versus silver right now?
I think silver is peaking right here. I think we're going to start to we're going to start very soon to see gold outperforming silver again. Whether that happens with a silver pullback, which I suspect will happen, versus a stronger gold market, I have a feeling we're going to peak on silver and silver is going to pull back here. And gold's not going to be hurt as much. It worries me a little bit what you just mentioned as far as 5 months of closing highs. The law of averages says we're getting close to where We're going to have a down month. So August might be it for gold and silver. But silver will get hurt a lot more, I think. Back in the move, when we had the last run up to 2011, we didn't see 5 months in a row of higher closing gold prices. So that's pretty unusual. And plus, we're getting very close to the high of 1923. And so I think we're going to move into considerable resistance here for a while. You could cut right through that and keep going. But I think we're going to have a little bit of consolidation for a while as we move into the year. And I think we're going to see some consolidation starting in August. And August, the odds are very good that we're going to have a lower closing month for silver and gold in August.
So what are some of your targets then for gold, for silver? Where do you see a reasonable pullback stopping it?
I don't think, I think we have a little bit more to the upside on the gold to challenge that 1923, but I can't really see gold significantly going lower than 1800. I think that's a good, point to be. I think that's going to be a very good support level for gold is 1800. And I don't see on a pullback it necessarily breaching that. And if we do, I don't think it'll go back at all below. I don't think the odds are good at all for it to move back to anything lower than 1700. But I don't expect a big move down yet. We may plateau. And because some of the monthly charts are very impressive yet, even if we get a pull back here. So I don't think it's going to be significant at all, Corey.
Hey, just even a pullback to 1800, that's not very much. This is undoubtedly a very strong market, and more attention is shifting to this market as well. What about silver? What are some lower targets for silver? Do you see us dropping back into the teens, or is silver going to be able to hold in the 20s?
I think we could see silver back at $18.50. I think that's a possibility. Right around the, right around the $20 level, $18.50 to $20. I don't think it gets much lower than that at all, but, it's probably the best chance is around $20, but, that's the lowest it's going to see again. And that would be healthy, by the way. I think that would be extremely healthy because I don't think many of the stocks would suffer proportionately. But the people certainly could, if they've sold into this rally a little bit, could buy back. And I sold one of my major silver holdings. I sold part of it yesterday and today. The rest of my silver companies I'm going to keep because we're in this long-term bull.
Okay, now, Doc, those are a couple of key comments there. One being the fact that these pullbacks are very natural and very healthy for these bull markets, especially when you consider how much these metals prices have run. But also when it comes to stocks, that was going to be my next question. It sounds like you think that the gold stocks, the silver stocks, they're not going to outperform on the downside if these corrections happen. Do you see kind of GDX, SIL, these individual stocks as well, do you see them just more or less moving sideways, almost a consolidation move?
Yes, more of a consolidation move, actually. And in fact, GDX is down a little bit today, but I don't see a lot of risk to GDX or GDXJ. We're peaking on a lot of these again. I can see where we can move back down toward 35 for GDX, between 30 and 35. But I don't see it going much lower than that at all. In fact, it would be healthy if it did it. Because if we get too much of a blowout right here, I'm afraid we're going to pay a steeper price. I would rather see these nice little pullbacks that we've been seeing and then starting to grind higher again. That's a much more healthy as a bull market.
Doc, how much of this whole move in precious metals is due to the U.S. dollar starting to break down? There's the argument of all this easy money, low interest rates. We've talked about that for a while. But the U.S. dollar and its breakdown that started a few weeks ago, how important is this?
Very important. And I think it's going to continue. We have a good chance of the U.S. dollar gradually moving lower over time. And I think that's going to be extremely supportive for the precious metals. Even the monthly chart looks pretty ugly for the U.S. dollar right now. And if we get a closing month where we are right now, it does not bode well for the next few months for the U.S. dollar as far as the strength in the dollar. So we could move significantly lower over the time, and that's going to be real positive for the precious metals.
So, Doc, care to share with us any stocks that you are paying attention to, whether you're buying right now, whether you're just watching them for another pullback? Where do you see some of the better opportunities out there?
Well, I think the gold stocks have kind of just moved little bit up and sideways as the silver stocks have taken over. But I think the silver stocks are, and I think they're starting today. In fact, I think the silver stocks are a little bit more at risk right now than the gold stocks. So I'm watching some of the gold stocks, actually hoping that some of them pull back a little bit so I can add a little bit more to them. And I add just a little bit because I have such a large amount now, and so it doesn't raise my cost basis much going forward. So I'm very cautious about that. And I'm allocating, and I have for the last few months allocated more money into uranium, actually, than I was before. So I want to build a nice cost basis there for some of the better uranium stocks. But I one of my favorite stocks, and I've said this before, is Equinox. I like that company. And I like the producers, again, because if we start to get a little bit of a pullback here on the next move higher, I think the producers will lead the way again, because some of these juniors have had some good moves. So I think if we consolidate here for a while and move back a little bit, that the producers will be the one leading us forward again.
All right, Doc, can you give us any names? Everybody always wants some names. Give us a couple stocks, please.
Yeah, yesterday we were talking about some of the stocks I held. I went down a list and you said, wow, that's a lot. Well, I like to diversify my risk a little bit, but I like Hecla as a silver play and a gold play. You know, a lot of these silver, there aren't a lot of pure silver plays anymore. A lot of these silver companies have broaden out into gold. And I also like Coeur d'Alene. They had, you know, kind of a poor report a few months back, but I think they're getting their act in order. So I like Coeur d'Alene. Another one that I have a very low cost basis in is one of my best performers is Skeena. And Skeena continues to do well, and I wish it would pull back a little because I'd like to buy more, but I've got a good position in that at a very low cost basis. So I like that one again. And then there's, I've done another one I've done very well on was Wallbridge, and that's starting to pull back here. It's going to give people opportunity to get back into it if they missed it. So those are just some of them, but, you know, and oh, another one which I have a very large position in for a long time is Alexco. I like that as a silver play as well.
All right, Doc. Always great having you on the show. Thank you for the broad update on, well, wide range of markets, but also on some of the stocks that you are holding. And yes, I know when you and I chatted a couple days ago, boy, oh boy, you do hold a lot of these stocks, but just being diversified. Doc, thanks for your time this weekend. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Look forward to chatting with you really throughout next month. Everybody stick around. I'm going to be right back continuing to discuss the precious metals sector.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back, continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed that lengthy discussion with Richard Postma, a.k.a. Doc. We covered a lot of the markets and a lot on the precious metals. I'm going to focus on the resource sector here as I am chatting with Matt Geiger. He is the managing partner over at MJG Capital. Matt, you run a focused resource, even now precious metals, more focused fund. That's because, hey, precious metals have been running. I haven't chatted with you for a number of months. Let's get your general comments on the strength of the precious metals market. Gold closed the week pretty much right at $1,900. It's up hundreds of dollars from that low just a couple years ago. Silver also had a good start to the week, but silver's way off of its highs compared to where gold is. What's your assessment of both gold and silver, please?
Hey, Corey, good to be back on the program here. To your point, I was just looking at the date of our last interview, and I think we talked in the last week of February. Maybe we mentioned coronavirus once or twice in that interview, but boy, has the world changed in the month since. That really does feel like a world away. So it's good to be back with you. Yeah, obviously, it's been a pretty euphoric few months here for those of us involved in the precious metal space. Whether you're holding physical metals or, you know, whether you're investing in miners, or in my case, more in the junior niche of the market, we're seeing it really explode to life, particularly in the junior space. I'd say over the past eight to 10 weeks, we're starting to see some significant capital inflows. I think of those of us that have been following this market closely for a while have been waiting for this. I mean, sure, a lot has changed. There's a lot of uncertainty out there around the global economy, around the effect of COVID and what that's going to rot on the world in terms of geopolitical tensions, racial tensions. There's a lot going on right now. And generally, in times of volatility and uncertainty, gold will perform quite well. And then there's, of course, the other factor, which is low or negative interest rates across the world. If you're looking at the United States, we've been negative real rates for quite some time, and we're teetering just on the edge of zero in terms of the Fed rate. And so all of these are conducive to owning precious metals. Obviously, the lower interest rates are the less of an opportunity cost of owning gold or gold-related equities. I think the narrative's been in place for a while, and you know, due to a confluence of factors, people are finally catching on to the trend. The prices have gone up of both the metals and the equities, and now the price rise is justifying the narrative. And so you're finally starting to see generalists start to rotate into the space. It's a bit of a bittersweet feeling, I would say. It probably means that we're certainly not at the beginning of the precious metals bull market that began, I would argue, in early 2016, probably closer to the fourth or fifth inning, potentially a little bit later in the game even. I think I'm confident saying that we're probably going to have at least another good 18 months to go for investors in both gold and silver. Obviously, that's subject to change. That is my best guess at the moment for where we're at in the current cycle. You did mention silver. silver bugs are a particular type of crazy, but I can see the allure of that particular metal at this point in time. To be honest, I'm a bit surprised how well it's done in recent weeks. I was thinking due to depressed global industrial demand that we would see silver lag gold for a little bit longer than it has, but it's played catch up in a real way. And if you want to look at it from a glass half full perspective, you could say that silver, the silver price action is validating this precious metals bull market we're seeing. You know, final point, gold is at this point at $1,900 an ounce. It sounds crazy to say that after waiting years. You know, we're really a stone's throw away from the all-time high in U.S. dollars. From a silver perspective, though, it's worth noting that silver prices would have to more than double to hit the $49.50 dollar level that it's peaked at twice in the past 30 years before retreating pretty significantly. So, I can see the excitement around silver, but investors should be careful. The euphoria is quite palpable.
Hey, fair enough. You know what? Silver has very much lagged gold, but even look at some of the gold mining stocks or look at the ETFs. GDXJ is still 160% off of its all-time highs, and that's when gold was almost a decade ago, right around current levels. So still arguably some catch-up to do. You even mentioned you focus a lot on junior companies, and in the last about 2 months, maybe it's only been a month, we've started to see juniors move higher. Even companies that hadn't issued news since the beginning of the year, their stock prices were doubling. Fine, they're still at very low levels compared to maybe a few years ago, but what's your assessment of the bounce that we've seen in the juniors that hasn't exactly just been selective juniors?
Right. Well, this is, again, bittersweet as well. You know, a lot of the junior space, and I've said this before, the vast majority of these companies are not investable. So investors should be extremely selective with the management teams that they choose to work with. And I think that's better for the industry at large. However, you know, what we're seeing is the Vancouver paper mill is fired up and it's ready to go. And there's a lot of new companies being issued. A lot of insiders are getting very cheap stock and you know, pushing that out onto retail investors that are bidding it into the 10 and 20 and 30 cent range and sometimes higher. So, of course, this is all fun and good while it's occurring. But to me, I think the industry, the more disciplined the industry stays and the more disciplined investors are, the longer this run should go on. But I think if we get too aggressive and start throwing money at anything that looks like it can make a quick profit, we're doing both ourselves as investors a disservice, but also the industry at large. So, you know, I know I'm one tiny voice out here in the wind, and as the excitement continues to build, I'll get drowned out more and more. But I would just encourage people to really stick with the high quality management teams as much as they can, and to really resist the temptation, even if there's easy money to be made in a quick promote. Just to stay disciplined and to focus on teams that are trying to create real value, that have been at it for a while, that are well incentivized, you know, that are averaged in at a share price that's close to you, and aren't distracted with four or five different deals. I think the longer that investors can focus on those types of companies, you know, the less likely we are to have a 2016 like event where, you know, things just go ballistic for 9 months and then, you know, there's a 2-3 year hangover afterwards.
Yeah, we don't want to see a replay of 2016, but hey, this run for stocks and the metals has now gone on for almost 2 years, so that's something to also consider. When it comes to management teams, I completely agree with you. One, make sure these management teams just didn't get a ton of cheap shares, which really just blows out the share price. Really just blows out the share structure. But when it comes to past success, does the focus really just have to be on them either building a mine or, even better, selling a company in the relatively recent past?
Yeah, I think that's one of the easiest things to look at. I mean, it's helpful to have and of course, some of these management teams are household names, right? And so I would never... it's very easy to invest with a Ross Beaty or a Robert Friedland or some of these other serially successful names that are out there. And I think even in this in market environment, it's probably worth paying up to be involved with people that have done this before and have made shareholders money on multiple occasions. Now, I think it's okay to go further, you know, afield as well. Not everybody's had 4, 5, 6 major, you know, successes under their belt. But yeah, look at the CEO's last couple deals. Reach out to investors that you know were involved with those past companies if you're able to, and get their feedback. Did it make money for them? You know, was management putting in 100% into the deal, or were they distracted with other money making ventures? If things didn't go well, why was that the case? Was it due to poor decision making? Was it due to poor ethics? Or was the management team truly taking a legitimate risk and it just didn't happen to pay off? Maybe a permit that was expected to come through didn't, or an exploration thesis that did have a lot of merit and a lot of excitement surrounding it just didn't pan out. So you should consider all of these things when evaluating management teams. But again, I mean, very simple things to look at would be how much money have they put into the deal themselves? What's their average cost per share? Are they issuing themselves a bunch of cheap options in addition to their initial position? And really looking at focusing on teams with 10, 15, 20% board and management positions, it solves a lot of ills. This is not always the case, but generally when you see that type of skin in the game from a management team, you're going to see lower G&A in total for the company. It's less likely that you're going to see stock options thrown left and right. It's less likely that the company is going to blow all of their money on promotion. When management has that vested stake, they want to put that money into the ground and actually try to drive true value. So it's a very simple thing to look at, but I think it does a world of wonder if you can just narrow your opportunity set to those with management teams with double-digit ownership, and you're not investing at a 5 or 6 or 10x uplift to their average cost per share.
Okay, hey, fair enough. That is something to find. It's all public information, or at least a lot of that is. What about these drill plays too? Drilling has been driving these stocks. Some companies issue a good drill result, and I've seen stocks double in a day. The market is clearly paying attention. What do you look for in a drill program outside of obviously the strong management team?
Sure. Well, taking a step back, I do feel that we're in store for a pretty strong exploration and discovery market here. It's really been close to two decades since we've had a market like this. Even if you look at the 2002 to 2007 commodity boom, the major beneficiary there were the optionality plays. The companies with large pre-existing deposits, ounces or pounds already in the ground, and then seeing massive re-ratings on their share prices based off of rising metal prices. I think investors have learned their lesson quite painfully based off of what happened both in 2007, 2008, and then the even bigger bust from 2012 through 2015. And I think in this upcoming market, investors are going to focus, if you're looking on the development side of things, on high quality projects that can make money at spot metal prices, don't cost too much to build, and you can get a quick payback, 3-4 years, hopefully even quicker than that. And then on the exploration side of things, you want to be looking for companies that are searching for these types of deposits and are in the right neck of the woods, and aren't just flogging, a fourth generation project that's already been through three cycles, won't be built in this cycle. Sure, maybe you can get an uplift if the gold price continues to run. So for the exploration plays, that's what I'm sticking to. Now I will say we have a bias, I'd say, to two different business models. The first is the prospect generation business model. And if we're trying to bet on a new discovery that hasn't been made yet, that is almost always the way that we go about it. As you know, exploration is an incredibly risky game here. Even the best stock pickers are going to lose far more than they win. And I'm just not a fan of betting on single asset explorers. We have a couple in the portfolio, but as a whole, I do like the prospect generation business model, getting multiple shots on target. A big discovery, even if you own only 20% of it, can make fortunes for a 10 or 20 or $30 million prospect generator. So that's one way to play it. And another way to play it that's also very valid strategy is to go for the post-discovery plays. Now, this takes a certain amount of attention, of course. You have to be following the news wires extremely closely, and you also have to have some some intuition. Even if you're not a tried and true geologist, you either need to have that experience to recognize what looks like it could be an economic hit or could be leading to an economic deposit, or you need the connections to be able to bounce ideas off of them. But the idea is that you scan the market, you keep an eye on all these single project explorers, you don't buy them ahead of the discovery. But when you see that occasional major hit, when you said, there could be something serious here. This is not looking like a $50 or $100 million deposit. This, if they continue in this vein, there could be real value created. You jump in right there in the 12, 24, 48 hours after that drill hole and hold on for dear life. And in this market, those types of stories have been working quite well.
Yeah, fair enough. Hey, there's been some very nice moves in good stories, but also in some of these stories that I think people are just looking for any sort of cheap paper out there, and that can actually move stocks higher. I want to get a quick comment from you regarding your trading strategy when it comes to warrants. I know not everybody holds warrants, but I know the investing that you do in some of these companies to get your positions, you do take part in private placements, you get warrants along with those. This recent run-up in stocks has put a number of companies with warrants in position for those warrants to be exercised. How do you trade a stock or invest in a stock where you hold shares, you also hold warrants, and now the warrants are in the money?
So I don't have a cut and dry formula for this. I think the most important thing to look at, and this is what you do as an investor holding common shares as well, at least if you have a value investor orientation, you need to understand where the company's at in its life cycle, where the current share price is, what you believe the either intrinsic value is or the speculative value per share, and the delta between where the current share price is and where you think it should be at this stage. And so even if you have warrants that are well in the money, if it's a company where you have conviction, extreme conviction that it can go up another 2 or 3x, I'd be happy to hold that entire position. So again, no hard and fast rules on warrant exercising. Of course, if it's well in the money, and you see the share price start to get close to what you view as fair value, that's a good opportunity to exercise and take your money off the table, or partially exercise, and then maybe exercise the rest six months thereafter. I think another thing to think about is just position sizing in your overall portfolio. We have a pretty hard and fast rule where we don't want, if we can avoid it, this can be sometimes difficult. But with private names, we don't want any position to be above 20% of our overall portfolio. To be more specific, 10% at cost and then 20% at market. So we could take a 10% position. I'd be comfortable for it to double in price. But if it starts rising from there, I'm going to want to take profits continually on the way up. And so that can also be a way to stay disciplined and not get too greedy with these warrants. Just make sure that you have position sizing rules. And that can do a good job of keeping you in check. And then the final point I'll make is obviously the date till expiry is extremely important. So, even warrants well in the money, if there's still another 3 or 4 years to go, I'm going to be less inclined to just reflexively exercise and then dump the shares immediately. Maybe you'd want to, in that case, even if it's well in the money, take half your money off the table again and let the rest ride. But I know other investors that are a lot more aggressive in exercising their warrants. I respect that strategy, and that's been a good strategy in the 12 years that we've just lived through. But in these kind of bull market scenarios, you can leave quite a bit of money on the table if you just have a hard and fast rule to exercise the warrants and get out, as soon as you get double your initial capital. I don't think it's as simple as having a single formula. I think you have to look at each of it on a case-by-case basis.
All right, Matt, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you for joining us on this weekend show. Interesting comments, and hey, a much better environment for junior mining or junior resource stocks. It's nice to see. Hey, Matt, I'm going to have you back on in probably a couple months, but in the meantime, everyone stick around. I'm going to be right back to wrap up the show with a quick company update. Thanks for your time, Matt. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Corey. Good to be on.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are getting a company update from GR Silver Mining, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol GRSL, and on the OTCQB under the symbol GRSLF. I'm chatting with the president and CEO, Marcio Fonseca. Now, Marcio, there's been a lot of talk about silver this week with the run that silver went on early in the week. And quite frankly, I've had a lot of guests throughout the week talk about silver stocks, how these can still play a lot of catch up even to where the gold stocks are. And especially if silver keeps on moving higher. GR Silver Mining, you guys in Sinaloa, Mexico, you had some recent drill results from the Plomosas Silver Project. And even more importantly, I think from a relatively new area that you are exploring, the San Juan area. Some of the recent drill results that came out just on Friday, a couple hits of over 1,000 grams per ton silver equivalent, over some decent widths too, 3.1 meters. There was another result over 2.7 meters. Please, Marcio, just give us a little update on this San Juan zone, since this is some of the first results we've been seeing just this week.
Thank you, Corey. The San Juan is one of the six areas that we have the recent historical drilling, and we are about to start drilling again there too. What's important here is that when we acquired the project, the Plomosas project from First Majestic, we came across some data that showed us that the area could have a strike length at that time, 3 months ago, of 400 meters. But today, after we have been integrating all the data, we believe that it extends probably close to 1 kilometer of strike length, and that connects other targets nearby, La Colorada and San Francisco, creating a very large footprint of epithermal veins. And what was probably one vein, now you can see probably six veins in the area.
So in figure one of the news release that came out on Friday, it's a drone image of this overall area, but it's not just the San Juan area. As you said, essentially with these drill results, you're creeping into some of these other zones that the company is planning to explore. How's that going to impact how you explore these areas and also the significance of maybe even tying together these different zones?
The impact is that we see very positive in a way that we are not dealing just an isolated area. They are all connecting to each other and showing that more and more we can see multiple veins and easy to move drill rigs around because they are very close and accessible. And as important here as well is how this can create a good and large footprint for future resource estimation in this area.
So, Marcio, what drilling is still ongoing at San Juan? How many drills? How many more meters?
So, we announced probably 2 weeks ago a drilling program, core drilling, where we brought one drill rig to the site and have another one arriving today. And there's a third one probably in 10 days. The drilling program is a total of 4,500 meters that is going to be split between San Juan in the Plomosas mine area, where we have the underground development, potentially some underground drilling. And we are going to split between these two because these areas are the ones with the highest probability to define resources between now, probably end of the year, early 2021. And on top of the 4,500, we are planning to put probably 1,000 meters of shallow holes. Shallow means probably no more than 100, 150 meters deep drill holes because we believe these veins are close to the surface and we can really define some new areas.
So what about this Plomosas area as well? Because that's a different exploration area on the Plomosas project where earlier this week, July 20th, you came out with some more high-grade results. We saw, again, a little over 1,000 grams per ton silver, over 5.4 meters. So even a wider width, all including, too, almost 2,500 100 grams per ton silver over 2 meters. So you're also seeing some high grade at this Plomosas vein as well.
Yeah, the Plomosas mine area is the site where Grupo Mexico operated a small lead and zinc mine back in 2001. They never really fully explored the silver and gold because when they shut down the mine, the silver and gold price was in a completely different environment. For the audience, when they shut down the mine, the gold price that they were using was $290 per ounce, and the silver price they were using was $5 per ounce. So they never really bothered to really fully explore the mine. So they left an asset to us today that we have a great opportunity to go underground and sample and even drill these great, these silver and gold veins that are on the walls and continue to define new zones to support a future resource in the area. So you don't need to deploy a lot of money and to excavate tunnels to do underground drilling. And as a reference, the company just closed this bought deal, so we are fully funded to do a lot of drilling.
Okay, well, that's important. Obviously, in these markets, if you're drilling and drilling high grade, it helps move the stock. Some of the nuances of this Plomosas mine area and the Plomosas vein. We saw results that ranged from pretty near to surface and the whole way down to about 100 meters, just over 100 meters downhole, where we saw some of the higher grade results. What's the attack strategy and what's your overall theory of how this mineralization is made up underground here?
So the way we, together, the geological staff and ourselves as a senior management, we are modeling this for the first time in 3D. Nobody ever did a 3D geological model of this area. And we are going to be the first company to put a 43-101 resource in this area. We see that the gold and silver veins, they kind of follow different structures, steeper than the lead and zinc breccia. That gives a good way for us to control that underground. And we are not really looking to do deep drill holes, just trying to, from the surface or some specific areas along the tunnels, to drill these veins and try to model this along the strike. The Plomosas mine is another example, similar to someone. We thought it would be just 250 meters long. Now we are close to 500 meters long along the strike of evidence of mineralization underground and on surface, or close to the surface.
So, Marcio, when it comes to this Plomosas overall silver project, what are some of the payments that are due?
So, the Plomosas silver project is today 100% owned by GR Silver Mining. When I say that, we closed the acquisition last March. It was a small payment in cash, shares to First Majestic, the vendor, and we granted them a royalty of 2%, which we have a buyback. So it's really important for us because today we control completely this Plomosas silver project. No longer need to pay any money to the vendor. The second property nearby, that's the San Marcial, is one that we have an option. It's a 3-year option. We are far ahead in the expenditures, and there's a payment of 2.5 million Canadian due on May 2021. And we are in discussions already with the vendor, which was SSR Mining, to anticipate and fully pay the money or have a combination of shares and cash, because it's a no-brainer to combine these two assets. And this company is going to be the first company ever to have 100% ownership of the two assets at the same time.
And just to bring everybody up to speed, you do have a resource on the San Marcial project, but the Plomosas project, you've alluded to it a couple times during this interview, is that you are hoping to have a resource released to the market. It sounds like early next year. Do you have any more clarity on that time frame?
Yeah, as we are discovering more veins, as I said at the beginning, we had one or two veins, now we have six. We realize that it's important to drill those veins as well. We bring them as part of the resource. That's why it's likely to slip to the beginning of 2021.
Okay. So, Marcio, in terms of news flow then, as we continue through summer and even to the end of the year, what can everybody expect for drill results and any other sort of news?
We will continue to release the recent historic drill holes as we validate them. The validation means we get documentation, we confirm the presence of core or location in the field. But now we have an additional component to support the continuous news flow. 3 drill rigs that are going to be operating by August. tool next week, one already now. So by August, you can see start to see some fresh, brand new drill results together with the existing data that we are working with.
All right. Hey, Marcio, it's going to be a busy time for you. I will keep on following up on news flow and especially drill results. In full disclosure, I am a shareholder of GR Silver Mining. Please, everybody, keep sending me your questions. I'm getting a lot of emails on a lot of different companies. If anybody has any follow-up questions for GR Silver or any of the other companies that you hold, please just email me, fleck@kereport.com. I will follow up with those companies. I appreciate everybody tuning in this weekend. Marcio, I really appreciate this update and all the news flow that the company has had already in July and especially just in this last week. Marcio, really appreciate your time. Have a great rest of your weekend. Everybody else, same goes for you. Have a great rest of your weekend, and please keep on visiting our website, kereport.com, and checking in on our daily editorials. Thanks, Marcio.
Thank you.